at some point, they called me a piece of trash and that my team was just carrying me. Okay, so I died once at this point. So I'm not exactly certain what this person was talking about. But I just responded and I said, trash is meant to be carried, otherwise you're littering.
Scotch.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 111 of Coffee with Butterscotch, the game dev comedy podcast of Butterscotch Shenanigans. I'm Seth, and I'm the games programmer.
I'm Adam, and I'm trying to figure out what that is and if that was a binary number and I converted it to, you know, a decimal one.
I'm Sam, and I just thought, yes, 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 because that's what that is in binary.
That works, too.
That's right. It's episode 111, which, contrary to popular belief, is not a prime number. It's divisible by 37.
Really?
And 3.
Wow.
Hopefully, it's divisible by two things, because otherwise that would be real weird.
If it was, it's only divisible by one number. Yep. It's one of the weirdest non-prime numbers. Also, today is August 14th, 2017. Before we get started, we have a warning. Anything can happen on this show, and there will definitely be swearing. So if you are a baby, stop listening to podcasts.
Actually, if you're a baby, you don't understand words, so it's also fine.
If you are a baby, it's fine. If you're a toddler, we're getting into murky territory.
There's kind of an uncanny valley of, you know, right, youngness and profanity here.
Especially because you're basically a sociopath when you're a toddler. So if you learn how to swear, you're just going to be swearing all
over
the place.
You're not going to be doing it right.
Yeah.
You're not going to be doing it right.
You're going to be doing it in the most vulgar, violent way possible.
Mm-hmm. Right. Psycho. So you need the kind of joyful, enthusiastic swearing that's used for emphasis and that kind of stuff. Not the aggressive kind of swearing, right? And of course, children, they can't distinguish, and this is why we have to insulate them from profanity.
Mm-hmm. So I put them in those baby cages, you know?
You put them in those baby cages so they can't swear. all right. So we get some news this week. First things first, we have a name for our next game.
Are you ready? Drum roll.
We're not going to tell anybody. But
it did actually clear, though, finally, after going back and forth.
It took three rounds
of
name chooses.
Yeah. So we got one. We're pretty excited about it. And we'll be kind of getting stuff ready for, I guess, announcing it, which is the first step before we even show off what it is that we're doing. So that'll be sort of the next thing to look forward to coming down the pipe, hopefully the next, I don't know, couple weeks.
Just a couple weeks, couple years, months.
Seven years.
Could be a couple lifetimes.
Half-Life 3, you know?
Yep.
Yeah. One of those situations.
Wait, I thought we said we weren't going to say what the name is. Yeah, we looked around. Turns out there's no games with the name Half-Life 3 out there. Yeah. So no trademark problems. We're good.
But it's 1 over 2, L-Y-F-E.
Yeah. It's the fraction half.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Right. An L-Y-F-E.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then spelled out the word 3. So,
but with the number 3 is the first letter of the
word. Right. And then the E's in the word are also 3's.
Right.
Yeah. Sort of leet speak kind of a thing. Anyway.
But I do want to leave one clue, or two clues, actually, so that somebody could see if they could figure out what it is. Okay.
Okay.
So the clue is, if you search for this, it's two words. But if you search for it as one word, you only get 7 results in Google.
Yeah.
If you search for it as one word, you get 140,000. So with that, I think
as two words.
Sorry.
Yeah.
As two words, you get 140,000. So if you could find some pair of words that do that, then I don't know how many other ones also do that. So I can't really guarantee.
So it's a pair of words that if you put a space between them, it's 140,000 results. And if you put them together, it's only 7.
Correct.
So it's two words that literally nobody would ever conceive of putting together.
Except for 7 people.
But
those 7 results were all randomly generated text garbage from robots.
Boy, did we put a space between things?
I don't know if we have a space or not. We haven't actually settled on that for sure.
So. I mean, for a domain, it doesn't matter. So we're going to get that.
I don't know. We'll figure it out. Oh, we know what the words are, though.
We have some more work to do, obviously.
Step 1. Also, we spent Sunday morning doing a talk jam.
Yeah.
We each put together a few talks to submit to GDC.
GDC.
And last year, Sam gave, or this year, I guess, Sam gave 2 talks.
Yeah. Last GDC.
It's like a lifetime ago. Sam gave 2 talks at GDC, and they were both very highly rated. I think you had the highest rated business talk.
Business talk and the highest rated Indie Summit talk.
Are they both freely available on the Webernets?
The business one is still in the vault.
Ah.
And then the...
still in prison.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you want to see what you're in for, you can go to the GDC YouTube channel and you can look up Sam's Crashlands postmortem talk. So hopefully we get to do more of that stuff. Should we talk about what kinds of things we submitted.
Sure, yeah. Why not? One thing, we should talk about our approach first, which is that the first couple of years we did this, they just won't pay attention to you, right? So, and we had crafted these really, you did like a really intense job putting together one proposal. And then the way we got in last year, I think, was beyond actually finally having a successful game that people cared about, which was probably the requirement, was actually that we sent in 11 different talk submissions. Mm-hmm. And so this year, we're like, okay, we're pretty sure that I should be able to get in with something since I got the top-rated talk in two different tracks.
Mm-hmm. Should seem sufficient.
It seems like maybe they'll give me another chance.
And maybe that review score will spill over onto the rest
That's
of us.
That's exactly right.
We get a little sort of like a backsplash.
Yeah, so a halo effect. We submitted, we're going to submit, I think, 9 of them, and then we'll submit some of them twice, depending on the track. So
no, we're submitting 7.
7. Seven? Okay. Yeah. And some of them twice. So yeah. Some of them will be in the submitted to the main conference stuff and then some of them to the Indie Summit as well. So
rapid fire, what are your talk submissions about?
First one is called Time Mancy and it's advanced time production management and time techniques. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then the
Time Mancy.
The second one
is Time Mancy.
Is growing up from co-founding to co-managing an independent studio, which is basically about all of the dangers where after you have a little bit of success, you're in this weird sort of death valley where you can easily basically explode your studio.
Yeah. Well, so, and that process for going from the only people who are in the company, the people who also own and founded the company, mm-hmm. to where you have employees, which is now an enormous cultural.
Yep.
Or supposed anyway, enormous cultural.
All sorts of weird stuff.
Yep.
And then what was the third one?
The third one was, I don't know.
Something about... It was something real good, though.
It was super really good.
You know, I think it was my favorite one.
Isn't that great? How we spent an entire morning working on these, and the next day we're like, what?
I spent an entire day on mine.
Kinda like that. It's kind of like that waking up after a night of partying. What did I do?
What was it?
All right, you think about that.
Okay, yeah. All
right, so my two.
Christ, I spent an hour on it yesterday.
it's just such a matter of course. So my two talks, one is... Sort of it's called Common Pitfalls when starting an independent studio. So it's difficult for people to make a transition from being a hobbyist to actually forming a company, forming a team, and then trying to figure out how to manage their time and their projects and stuff, and know how to protect themselves legally and financially.
So yours is sort of like the first piece.
It's like the first piece. Like if you're going to make that transition from being just some person to being a studio.
And then what does that mean?
Like, what are all the ways that people tend to fuck that up?
Right.
And then how do you not do those things? Right. Mm-hmm. And then my other talk is called Design by Chaos, which is about the design technique that we use in-house where we don't use game design documents ever. And we basically allow the games to just design themselves through a very specific iterative process that we use, mm-hmm. Which we did, works for like an 8-hour game, a 2-day game,
2-year,
3-month game, 2-year game. It works for everything, but it probably doesn't work for large teams. Right. It takes like a small, flexible team to do it. So I'm going to be giving a talk about just that approach.
Cool.
What you got?
I got a talk on automate everything, make one person worth a jillion other people.
Yeah.
I'm probably going to condense that talk. but yeah, the idea there, and it was actually kind of interesting to talk about it because we had a quick sort of argument about the titling when we were talking about it about the question of, well, it's not really about automation. It's about, process improvement. And then Seth pointed out, actually, automation is just any time you offload something you're doing to a machine.
Right.
Right. It doesn't matter. But even further, you can take that as far as you want and actually say, anytime you cannot think about a thing because something else handles that for you, which means...
It's even a paper checklist.
A paper checklist does
automation is just taking something that was manual and making it not manual.
But it's not even about the manual part. It's about how much thinking has to... How much thinking and time has to go into it. So any reduction in thinking and in the time required to do a thing gives you more time to be an expert. Because if a robot can do it, then a robot should do it. Or a piece of paper, right? Mm-hmm. And you should go back to being a good artist or being a programmer.
Doing human things that robots can't do yet.
Yeah,
paper was the OG robot, I guess.
That's right. It's the OG robot.
I got an OG robot pad right here.
Nice. So this talk is sort of meant to do two things. One is to sort of make an argument that automation is awesome and you should do it and that it actually is accessible. Because there's a whole spectrum of automation of things. And the other one is then to give examples of those things that people can kind of use, right away. So simple stuff like even, paper-based or email-based kinds of things.
Cool.
All the way up to the kind of, full-fledged robot, robomancy that we do here. to make an argument why it might be worth investing in this in a real way for your team, you know, to add people or set aside time for your programmers to build custom tools for your studio. So I'm doing that talk. And then the other one is how not to be dumb, statistical reasoning in game, in the business of games.
And notice it's not how to be smart. And it's correct. Also not how to not be dumb.
Right.
It's this is just a specific dumb. Way not to be dumb.
Which is a play. It's a play off of the book, How Not to Be Wrong.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which is a book about, you know, mathematical and statistical reasoning. It's going to follow a lot of the same kinds of ideas, but the gist there is we're just confronted with bullshit all the time. Most of us don't even know it, and most of us are guilty of also purveying it. And as a consequence, we're all making bad decisions all the time. And so this is basically, but most people also are scared of statistics because it's poorly taught, if it's taught at all. And so this is kind of an attempt to give people just enough, you know, just enough of a foundation, an intuitive foundation in statistical reasoning that they can actually apply it right away. It's like they can just leave and now all of a sudden see the things that are tricking them all the time. With the hope that, and then with a bunch of examples, you know, taken from our studio, taken from stuff we've seen in the press and stuff, so that people can get a sense of how to apply that to making business decisions or game design decisions or whatever.
Cool.
Yeah.
It's important. Seems to like know. A good slate of talks. Yeah, I would listen to
I'd go to all six of these, and then the seventh one that we don't
mystery
know.
What it is. Mystery one.
Wait, hold on. I might actually have
the doc open.
It's somewhere. Let's see. We got automate everything. How not to be dumb. Time mancy. No, I don't know.
You don't have that. It.
It's apparently in there. It does not exist.
I know it's in there. I just can't see it. So weird. I don't know what you did. Did it ever exist? What
if it's there? It's
what if we all
there.
Had one of those collective hallucinations that we all believed at the same time?
Well, I somehow spent an hour writing it. It's somewhere.
All right. It's well,
very baffling.
Just keep mulling that over.
We have it.
Yeah. So now we're just curious to see then what of these actually get accepted,
right?
If because it's now anywhere between 0 and 18 talks we have to give.
Mm, yeah.
So
it's gonna be a lot.
Yeah.
So yeah, but what we also is one other news item from last week is that we, speaking of GDC and sort of what the point is for us, is that we finally managed to import all of our contacts into one usable database.
Yep.
Using a tool that everybody who does any sort of spreadsheet work, where you if you've ever been like, I wish this spreadsheet was better.
I wish this spreadsheet was a database.
Yes. There's this thing called Airtable that we found. And I was on a podcast a few weeks ago, and one of the producers of the podcast, who's also one of the guys who shot a lot of the footage for the documentary, actually, he was showing me kind of how their workflow goes. And he pulls up this thing. And I've been sort of in this, essentially this contact management hell, trying to figure out how to.
I think you mean existential crisis.
Yeah, one of those. We're trying to figure out how to take all of the contacts that we've ever had from the studio, because we know there's literally thousands of them, and put them into a thing
so that we can get at them.
That I can get at them in an intelligent way. So if I say, hey, I have this piece of news that I want to send out, or hey, I had this idea, who should I contact that I could consult this oracle?
You could say, for example, like, I want to send this news to any people who are PC, who are in the PC games area in the press who have covered Crashlands.
Right.
You want to be able to just like pull that list of people up.
Yeah. And a lot of marketers use a list like to do all your marketing. So that's the thing that always cracks me up. People are like, oh, I can't do it. It's like literally all you do is you build a spreadsheet and email people to death. So that's the extent of it. So finally we use Airtable, and last week was a cumulative 42 hours. This is a funny thing talking about automation. Because there was no way to automate this particular thing.
It's kind of like anytime we'd go to an event like PAX or GDC or whatever, we would have another new spreadsheet where at the end of each day, we'd take all the business cards and just dunk all those names into a spreadsheet.
Yep, try to jot down some notes about people, you know, all that stuff.
So we compiled, it was 7 different spreadsheets into this one database. So it was a 1,200 contacts total.
And we trimmed a lot out.
And then added notes and sort of like, you know, where our relationship is with them. Added some different categories for other stuff, like if they've covered Crashlands before and what links I actually linked out to those things. So we now have this really rich database.
Well, it's also cool because one of the things in particular is that it's when there are that many people, no matter how much you like somebody, you can't remember them in a pool of 1,000 people. And so having a way to kind of categorize based on how warm the relationship is, is really useful, because now we actually have a long list of people who in the database it says it would be really great to know this person, but also we don't have a relationship.
But also we're just an acquaintance with them, yeah, or whatever.
So we know, you know, we're to start focusing our efforts.
Yeah. So if you're doing any sort of marketing stuff or just yeah, if you've been working with a spreadsheet and you're like, I wish this was better, go check out Airtable and see if it's the thing for you. It's definitely helped us a bunch. And then we found another one from that same guy, which was called Process Street. So this goes back to an idea we had, I think, almost a year ago, where as we were bringing people on and dealing with the problems of scaling a studio, we realized that there's so many things that if we could just have essentially a checklist that we could instantiate, where you had this sort of mother checklist and then you said, I would like to do this, and it would actually give you a checklist you could work through.
So it's kind of like you have a checklist template.
Yes. Yeah. And then you build an instance of it, and then you work through the instance, and then that sort of gets archived and you put notes on it, whatever.
Which you can't do with normal. So we use Todoist, or I use Todoist, mm-hmm, a lot, which is a to-do list management tool. Problem is, once you check a thing off,
it's gone.
It's gone now because you did it, right? You can't just like make a new duplicate of that list.
Right. So there's no template for like, oh, I'm going to do laundry on Sunday. Let me put that series of tasks in my thing.
Yep, right. It's too hard to remember how to do laundry.
Exactly. Well, it's a simple example. Yeah. So when you get to something complex, like for example.
But like what Sure has to do when he has to deploy an update, for example,
right,
to Crashlands.
Or what Monique has to do every week to put the podcast up.
Right.
Right. There's a huge series of steps to go through. And so it's really, we've built these checklists in basically Google Docs, and these things can be called notebooks just internally. But with Process Street, now we're sort of experimenting with it to see if it's essentially the right tool for us. And the first one is with this, with the podcast, actually. So basically what you do is you outline a template, and then you can instantiate that checklist, work through it, make notes on it, tag other people in it, which sort of gets saved to an archive. So you can be like, oh, I did the podcast sheet like 3 weeks ago, and there's like a weird thing that happened. I'm gonna go look at that and see what that note was.
So the idea, and I think this comes back to the automation, mm-hmm, thing, where it's not, like as Adam said, it's not just about doing things by hand. It's also about thinking about things.
Right.
And if every time you go through a particular process, if it's basically the same every time, you don't want to have to think about every step and do every step. At the very least, you could stop thinking about every step. Right.
Yeah, it becomes very costly if you have to do both.
Right. So it's process.st, by the way.
Yeah.
So it's called Process Street, but that's...
So I want to hear from our listeners, if you guys use this stuff over the next week, just throw a thing in the podcast.bscotch.net thing and tell us how it went for you, because... It's been pretty remarkable this past week.
Very useful tool.
Getting these tools up and running. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. All right. So let's move on to some questions.
Yeah.
These questions come from our listeners at podcast.bscotch.net. So if you want to get your question on a future episode, get down in there and throw some text in the box and then hit submit.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And if you have a hard time with that, you can go to Process Street and set up a checklist.
Well, actually, you know what's really interesting about that point? Nobody in the world would like go to submit something, you know, and then forget to submit. So they just didn't and know that they didn't. And then send us an email and be like, hey, can you recover like this
I
typed it, but I didn't actually submit it. But when it comes to our cloud saving system,
right? People they make a save on their device. They throw their device in the toilet.
Yeah.
And then they're like, can you recover
they're like, I didn't sync this.
You know how I never sent that to your server and stuff?
Can you still recover?
Can you get that for me?
But I just suddenly realized how
too many layers of abstraction.
Right. You know. Right. Yeah. It's also understandable, I think, that feels different and is confusing. Yeah. The fact that it's not different.
It actually is the same thing under the hood. All right. So first question comes from Dr. Jonas, who says.
Dr. what?
Dr. Jonas.
What's he a doctor of?
We'll find out.
He's a doctor of Jonas.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Yeah. You guys.
This is a degree program, not a person. That
right.
Is a
I think it's for fandom about the Jonas Brothers, the musicians.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. This person's been studying the Jonas Brothers PhD. For years, mm-hmm. Gone through 15 years of school.
Got one of those creepy maps on the wall with like, you know, cutout pictures and strings attached to different points. It's good.
And then just a big like red scribble says, what does it all mean? It's just circled 30 times. All right. So Dr. Jonas says, you guys seem to have a great philosophy on life and work ethic. In my line of work, IT, I often struggle with learning how to resolve large, new, insurmountable problems, which I have little to no understanding of.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sounds familiar.
How do you tackle these problems?
It's every day.
So I think there's one important point here, which is that he just kind of squeezed in the word insurmountable in there.
Yeah.
Like you gave up, buddy. That's a
surmount it.
Surmount it.
Yeah. Because like, okay, it's a new problem. It's complex. He could have said complex, but he chose to say insurmountable, which is a word that means this cannot be solved.
Well, no, it means it cannot be surmounted.
Surmounted, sorry.
Yeah.
So I think for starters, get that word out of your vocab.
And to be fair, it doesn't even make sense as a word because you can't even surmount something. Can you? Wait, can you surmount something?
You probably can.
I guess you just never
I can
it.
Surmount things. How about you?
Well, I think it's kind of it's kind of like the word existent, right? So you have non-existent, which is an important thing to note about something, right? Uh-huh. Something being existent is redundant because it has to exist, right?
It's a little less notable.
So something being surmountable means it's just a thing you can do. So you don't even need to use that word.
I think that's right. The best move is just to not have that word.
So don't even worry about that.
Well, so how do we go about when we're facing down a huge task, breaking that bad boy down?
So for starters, there is no such thing as a huge task.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Tasks are small things, which is what you need to always be thinking about. So don't worry about solving the big problem.
So let's use the example from marketing, the marketing problem from last week. So we know we've had this problem with the studio, and we know that sort of the next big leap for us is going to be not necessarily from making a game that's even more incredible than something like Crashlands. So we're intending to do that, but actually from getting much better at the entire marketing and business side of things to make whatever that game is just more successful by that virtue. So we have this huge, seemingly insurmountable problem, which is we need more marketing power and more marketing capability. What does that even mean? So
that was the first
question.
Insurmountable problem.
Exactly. So what does that even mean? And for us, it meant essentially creating a list of news beats. So we actually have one coming out tomorrow, which I guess will be yesterday for the podcast people.
Whoa.
it's crazy.
We have recording day before, on Monday. We have day one after tomorrow.
One coming out yesterday.
So what we did is we sat down and we said, okay, we essentially need to, by way of doing, build up whatever this marketing engine is. We want an engine that if we said, hey, we have a news item about X, you put it in there.
Spit it out.
You put it in the marketing engine.
And the market happens.
Marketing
happens. Sort of like a wood chipper. Like we just take a log of marketing, throw it in there, and it just sprays
all over the place.
Blood everywhere.
Sprays mulch onto everyone's gardens.
Also blood.
And blood for some reason.
I was thinking of the Fargo, you know.
It's very cardiovascular log. Thing. You know? Yeah. but yeah, so.
Bloody log.
So what we did is we said, okay, we need this engine in place. So what does that mean? So we didn't even know. So what we said was, here's four news beats that we can think of. And we'll take one of them, which is actually very small, and we'll just do what we do with that and see what, and then once we finish sort of creating a marketing plan for it and thinking through what that particular one needs, take a step back and say, how can we template this process? So in other words, how can we turn this instance into an engine?
Yep. What worked, what didn't, how can we take what worked and automate it?
And the best part was, so I wrote these pitches for this thing and then did a bunch of reading and created a template based on all the work that I did to create those pitches. And then after I created the template, went back and read my pitches and was like, these are terrible according to my template that I just made. Like, in other words, yeah, I did the activity.
Iterative, back. Cyclical process.
It's exactly. Iterative. Yeah. So the first step in solving any problem is, I think we talked about this last week a little bit too, is to just do a thing.
Yeah.
So that you have some frame of reference for whether or not that seemed to get you closer and you can start reflecting on it. Right. And then that gives you more information about how to move forward.
Right. So recognize that you cannot have the context to understand a problem until you already understand the problem. And so that shouldn't be the goal. The goal is to identify pieces of the problem.
Just start going.
And then just tackle one. Yeah. Right. So,
and I will say though, like having a really good organizational system, I think is one of the key things that if you don't have it, then no amount of you hopping in and doing things is ever going to be worthwhile because.
But also having lots of flexibility in that system.
Yeah. Yeah. So for example, if you say you're just like, okay, I have this huge IT problem. I want to get, I don't know.
I want to get all the information technology.
I want to get all the information technology.
I want to do it good.
So if it's the case that you start doing stuff, but you don't like essentially note what you're doing or take a step back after you've done that thing and figure out how that might apply on a broader scale, then you're basically just thrashing around. So it's not just enough to do. You then need to step back and evaluate the doing and make sure you keep notes.
So I want to talk about how this relates to our design by chaos concept. So in our games, we don't ever build a huge game. Like we end up with huge games, but we don't just sit down and go, all right, we are making Crashlands now. and then just work toward that. It's always the tiny, tiny steps of things that we work on. And it's purely an iterative process where basically it's like a three-step thing. One is we just go, what would be the next kind of cool little thing to be able to do in this game? So maybe it's taming a creature, maybe it's building a helmet, you know, whatever. And then we only solve just that little problem. So develop a new game system to make that thing work. And then we start actually putting content in. So if we just designed like the helmet system, we'll do that. And then Sam will put together content so we can put a couple helmets in the game. And then that introduces a new set of problems. Oh shit, we have helmets, but we actually can't wear them yet. Right. So
I forgot about that.
Right. So new game system. All right. Solve that problem. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now we can wear them, but there's no point. Okay. Well, let's put some stats on them or something. Right. Mm-hmm. So we do that. And then as we develop each of these new things, they reveal new problems. Mm-hmm. And pretty soon we've solved most of the problems. And then we do a content push where we say like, okay, we feel like the helmet idea is in a good spot. Let's make 5 new helmets. And so we just crank those things out. And then we put them all in and then we start to find new problems. Like at a certain point, adding all this stuff breaks everything. Mm-hmm. Cause all of our assumptions were built around stuff that we didn't understand.
Yeah, well, I think it's an interesting point with Crashlands in particular, because, a lot of people really like the story of the whole thing. And I think it's comical to understand that the reason that there's a story in the game is because it's boring to get 5 helmets in a row
for no
via
reason.
The same means for no reason. Yep. So the reason the story exists is actually because of all the content that we had put in long before we had intended to do any sort of story. In fact, we were trying not to do that. That was not our goal.
That was not part of the plan.
It just became required, unfortunately, in terms of how much work it took. So yeah, I think you push forward and do some stuff to sort of, you know, figure out the contours of the problem and then back up, note take, see what else would be what's been exposed and see how to tackle that next thing. Always with that end goal in mind of whatever, you know, solving whatever your problem is, because as Seth was saying, the reality is that any one of these goals or any one of these quote unquote problems is actually a mountain of tiny, tiny tasks for you to do. So that's why they're actually surmountable, because you're not doing that thing.
You're just doing a bunch of little stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden you're going to step back one day after doing a little tiny task. You're like, oh shit, that was the last one. I guess it's all done.
It's done.
Yeah.
Right.
So or it's never done, and just every once in a while you come back to it and make it a little better.
Yeah. Nothing's ever done. You just
learn new stuff over time.
Or you just walk away from it at some point.
Usually you walk away from it at some point.
All right. The next question comes from Rampandapus. So it's like a platypus, panda, ram, perhaps some kind of a combination. Mm-hmm. In competitive games such as Overwatch, Rocket League, etc., I've noticed that people fixate on winning. I've also noticed that there are a lot of angry people in these communities. Mm. Do you think there's any correlation here?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So if you're playing just to have fun, so this is something I noticed playing PUBG. I played PUBG this weekend.
Oh, you did? You got on the bandwagon. Huh?
I jumped on. Yeah. So when I was over at my annual lake trip last weekend, all my buddies there were talking about playing PUBG, and they're like, "You got to play with us. You got to play with us." And I'm like, "Okay, I will." So I did. It definitely feels pretty early access. It's pretty clunky, but it was fun. But definitely it was the case that as I was playing with my friends, one in particular was very anxious, like just because we actually won somehow. Mm. Like I literally killed nobody. I just got shot a whole bunch of times. I accidentally hit one of our people with a car, disabled him. So like I only was a burden to my team, but we won anyways. But as the map gets more and more constrained, my team was getting more and more sort of anxious and nervous and whatever. Mm. And I felt nothing, actually. Because for me, I was just enjoying the experience. Mm. And so whether I got shot immediately, whether I was hitting my teammate with a car, or whether it was coming down to just me and my teammates versus the last couple of other people.
It's all just part of the story.
It's all just having a good time with some buddies, you know? And whether we won or lost, it actually probably wouldn't have affected my experience of the game just whatsoever.
Interesting.
Right? So I do think it's the case that if you fixate on winning or losing, you are going to have those ups, those really strong emotional ups and downs where the game is stressful or anxiety inducing or It's rage actually, inducing.
Yeah, this happened for me on Saturday. So I played League of Legends with two of my friends and haven't played for, I don't know, 4 months or so. So very rusty. And that game changes constantly. So I had to like, I just read a bunch of stuff like while the screen was loading about sort of new changes. And then there's a new character I was playing against. But I had no idea what he did. So I was like, what the hell does this guy do? And they're like, oh, he can run through walls. And I was like, that's not fair in the slightest. And they're like, yeah, it's not even his ultimate. He just like, he gets to just like run on top of walls.
He just gets to.
And I was like, okay. So that was the only information I had. And then I was squaring off against someone. In our first match, we just like completely crushed the other team and it was hysterical. And all three of us are just having a great time. Like we assumed that we were just going to get completely demolished. And so for whatever reason, we were just sort of loose and having a great time. Second game, we go into the same approach. We're all just kind of giggling about what just happened. And a person on the other team who I was sort of squared off against, that other person started getting very, very angry, like probably like 10 minutes in, to the point where at some point they called me. They were like, they called me a piece of trash and that my team was just carrying me. Okay. So I died once at this point. So I'm not exactly certain what this person was talking about. But I just responded and I said, trash is meant to be carried. Otherwise you're littering. And this was the thing that's like, this like tipped this person. They went from being like, just really angry to like full bore rage. And
of course I'm being carried.
But the
I'm
best
trash.
Part was, the best part was as the game got further on and this person got more and more enraged,
they
got worse and worse and worse. And so it started getting to a point where whenever he and I would square off, I would just like just destroy him within a couple seconds. And then at one point, one of my buddies was like, how does it feel getting murdered by sentient trash?
You know, what's a really like, fun thing to do God. Is if somebody's really mad like that to like, especially in a PvP game, whenever they come after you, just run. Just run away and don't ever let them actually like
touch you.
Fight you.
Yeah, get the rage out.
because they'll just get even more mad and then they just do worse and worse and worse because they really want to like somebody to beat up on.
Right.
And if you just run away the whole time, just get
really upset. It was really interesting though, because like we honestly just had a great time because it was me and my two buddies playing. So we weren't playing with, you know, random people on our team, which always helps. Just like kind of chatting and doing goofy stuff and communicating really well and just having a great time. And then to see this because like they were doing just fine for that first bit of the game until that person started just losing their shit. Like they probably would have been fine, but instead they sort of, my guess is they sort of crumbled internally. Their entire team did because
yeah. Here's another interesting point. This is something I noticed in Rocket League is real bad about this. Mm-hmm. Is if you play public games, unranked games, as soon as somebody joins the match, if they notice that their team is losing, they just leave immediately. And they keep hopping from game to game until they end up on a team that's winning. And if you think about what this really means in terms of human psychology, is like, think about in your competitive gaming experiences, the most memorable, most awesome times you've had were not when you just like started a game, started winning, kept winning, and won.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. It's always when
it's hard
as shit. You're barely squeezing by and like you're just and getting
the last moment.
You're getting trounced and the last minute. You just like push through and win, right? It's like, yeah, you know, it's fun to win, but it's fun to win dramatically.
It's fun to strive is actually what's fun.
Yeah. And so playing against people who you're always just beating up on is just like an endless series of boring, unmemorable disappointments.
It's like applying cheats to a game.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds awesome. And then you do it, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, this is pretty boring. I'm going to play something else now.
You know? I'm invincible. I have infinite ammo. I can fly. I'm basically Superman.
Although then you probably say, this game sucks and it's boring. And then you go play something.
Then you go give it one star after.
Yeah. But I do think it's the case because all of the ways that all the metrics are tracked for these games have to do with the outcome. It's always about winning, right? So that's what determines your rank. That's what determines literally everything. So even in League of Legends, for example, they've had support characters since the beginning who can provide shields and heals. They track healing, but they never, ever tracked how much damage you as a support character like absorbed that was supposed to be hitting other players.
Yeah.
Up until I think they just added it like a couple months ago. And this is insane. And like the support characters in particular have always had a really weird role because they literally don't do anything as far as the objectives are concerned. Like, they don't blow up towers. They don't kill people.
Yep.
They just help everybody blow up towers and kill people. And so as a result,
they're just always at the bottom of the scoreboard.
Yeah. But it's so weird because
the team still wins.
It's clearly so obvious that they're not taking into account the metric that is actually important here, mm-hmm. which is some sort of metric of teamwork. Because if it was the case, for example, like how crazy would it be if it's the case that you could lose a game, but go up in rank because of some aspect of your teamwork, mm-hmm. right? Where they were like, oh, wow, you guys crushed it as a team, even though you lost. If that was the thing that they determined rank with, then you wouldn't. I don't think you would have as much of this,
or even if it just played into ranking.
Well, so, you also have an interesting thing. So I used to play World of Warcraft a lot, and I did Battlegrounds. Like it's their capture the flag. There's like various objective based PvP matches that you do, and you have a scoreboard in there that has like 9 different metrics on it. And only one of those metrics actually relates to the objective of the game, right? So like you may have like if you're playing capture the flag, you'll have a column that's like flag captures. And then there's like damage done, kills, deaths, healing done, all this shit, right? And so what you end up with is basically most people want to be at the top of some scoreboard.
Some piece of it.
But in a capture the flag map, almost nobody can be at the top of the flags captured scoreboard because there's only a couple of flags you can capture, right? And so instead, people compete to get the most kills, most damage, or most healing. Mm. And all of those things revolve around basically people getting together into a clump, standing in the middle of the battlefield and just trying to kill as many people as possible for absolutely no reason. And so you'll see so many times where somebody will grab a flag and they'll run through. Those people will start to attack the flag carrier, realize that that person's getting healed and is kind of hard to kill, and just let them run by because they're not going to be able to get any kills from it. Or in the Arathi Basin, which is like a King of the Hill map, there's 5 places in the map that are important. Everywhere else in the map is just like a road that goes between the important places, right? There's a certain type of player that everybody calls a road warrior because... they don't give a shit about the flags.
They'll just fight anybody, anywhere.
They just run down the roads, and as soon as they see a person, they're just like, let's fight, right? It doesn't matter whether they're actually competing for an objective. And I have to wonder if they just removed those metrics from the scoreboard.
Yeah.
How that would affect the...
completely changed.
Because it's also the case that people then use those metrics to attack each other through chat.
Yes.
Okay, so somebody will be standing at a flag defending, and just by chance, that flag hasn't gotten attacked, right? And if that person left, chances are somebody would sneak in and steal it, right? So that person's basically just been standing there diligently defending the objective and has 0 damage done on the scoreboard.
You don't get any points for being a good guard.
And so that person's standing there and they're being a good team player and they'll jump in a chat and they'll be like, hey guys, there's somebody going after the lumber mill. Somebody should probably get over there. And then somebody else will jump in and be like, shut the fuck up, Mr. Zero Damage, right? Like, you haven't done anything the whole match. And so so people just use this to kind of attack and bully each other.
Yeah, well, I think it's also because people just assume that whatever information they're given is the important information.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, you know? I don't even know if it's that you assume, it's that you...
it's just a way to lord over other people, you know?
It's the way to separate, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it is, right? But people don't actually take a second to think... what does this do? Right. What is the purpose of that number related to my objective? Because if you just give somebody any number, no matter what it is, they will compete on it.
Yep.
Right.
Without ever stepping back and thinking, should I? You know?
Yeah. I mean, salary expectations are a good, good point of this too.
Why do some CEOs make $450 million a year? because there's a scoreboard.
Because other CEOs do.
Yeah. So it's
information cascade.
Yes, as soon as you attach a number to something, people will compete on that number. It's just
against their best interest too.
Yep. And then they all get mad, then they attack each other, then they lose, and then they're sad, and then they go home.
Welcome to online games
and life
and life in general.
Mm-hmm. All right. So next question comes from Imcade. Will you ever do a small YouTube video of the studio and a sort of meet the team video?
Ooh.
So kind of like an MTV Cribs.
Oh yeah,
of the basement.
It'd be fun. I think people
Scotch Cribs.
I mean, like it's small. It's not.
It's going to mostly be very brief interviews with each of us saying what we do or something.
Gotcha.
The space itself, you can see the whole thing in 2 minutes? Seconds.
Yeah. You walk down the stairs.
You walk down the stairs. You turn your head one direction. You turn your head the other direction. You've seen it all.
Yeah, we have talked about doing exactly that. We made something similar for one of the things that we're doing that we're still aren't allowed to talk about, but we're getting really close supposedly to being able to talk about it. But we'll see. Who knows?
Yeah.
So we did something similar for that, and then while we were doing it, we're like, maybe we should just make a general one of these. But I don't know why we didn't.
I think only because we have to. It's going to cost us money to put it together. but yeah, that's the kind of thing that we would put that together. And then we would probably put that on our YouTube channel as kind of like the channel intro video thing, probably.
I think probably next time I mean, the reality is that the importance of something like that is largely due to whatever that we're working on at the time. So like next time we, for example, we go into a hiring phase or something, that would be the time to put something like that together, right? Because that's what.
But also as we spin up marketing for the next game, mm-hmm. Because that's going to be now more eyeballs of people trying to figure out. Because at that point, there's less info about the game out because it's not out. And so people are just trying to get more information about stuff. Then the more we provide, the better.
Right.
So yeah, maybe we should get on.
We probably should.
Okay.
All right. Next question comes from Degeki, who says, what limitations do you place on yourselves in your personal lives, the company, and your craft?
Limitations?
Ooh. So like what are, so we, have the can we not philosophy.
That's not a limitation. That's a,
well, it's
whatever the opposite of a limitation.
Well, it's the idea that with anything you're going to do, you should always be like, what if we didn't do this thing? What would the consequence of that be? Right. So basically just like apply a cost benefit question to everything. Right.
A little bit. Yeah.
And then don't do it if it's not going to be good. That's what can we not?
So I guess question limitations.
I think maybe it's just the wrong word.
Well, no, I'll take it for what it is. Cause I think the interesting thing about it is that if you're like most people, which again, we are most of the time,
sometimes we just
think about things a little more than most people do. But I think when it comes to this idea of limitations, the biggest problem is that you don't, if you know that you are limiting yourself in some way,
then quit it.
So like the thing is most of your limitations, you don't actually know until they hit something weird. So I actually found this weekend. So this is really good timing for this because my wife left for vacation for like 10 days. And once you've sort of built a life with someone and your habits are kind of like wrapped up in them being around in a lot of ways.
Then you decompose.
Exactly. Things kind of shamble around. So on Friday night, first night of her gone, so it always happens, play video games until like 1 a.m, right? Mm-hmm. Just happens every time. And then I wake up in the morning.
Not in like a celebratory way, but
no,
in
it's
like
just like, I'm out of control.
I have lost all sense of self.
It's so Saturday, wake up and I was like, okay, I need to get my shit together. And so, but I was like, I'm pretty sure I can't be in the house. Like I can work very effectively from a cafe. Right.
Well, that's why you were doing that. Cause Saturday I was like, hey, you want to like do the talk jam or whatever? And you're like, no, I need to get out of the house. I need to go to a cafe and just think about my life. I'm like, okay.
You were like, that's really deep. Are you okay? I was like, I'm fine.
Yeah, just, okay.
But so what I realized though, is as I was sitting in this cafe, you know, cause I was writing about stuff. I was like, what am I going to do this week? You know, cause usually my like default off time is just hanging out and that's not really available. So like, what am I going to do? So I made a list of like all of the things that I'd be interested in doing. Came up to like a 10 little sort of fun hobby things from things that probably I guess other people wouldn't consider a hobby, but reading up and doing YouTube videos on email marketing to learning some Chinese or practicing singing and stuff like that. Make this big list. And then I was like, you know, these have all technically been on my list for a long time. So what is it? Because I oftentimes feel like I want more time to be able to do these things during any given week. And now suddenly I have all this time, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm not necessarily voraciously diving in. In fact, I'm a little bit like timid. Yeah. I said, what's happening here? And so I basically just journaled in a cafe for like an hour.
Trying to talk your way through.
Well, so I realized what had happened. And this is going to this idea of the limitations and how you don't, you usually don't know them until something changes to expose them. Because I realized that I'd been using essentially my default sort of hangout time, even just with my wife, as a way to sort of excuse myself for not pursuing a lot of the things that I actually do want to pursue, because in reality, I'm actually a little scared of the fact that for the first bit of doing any of these things, you're just absolutely terrible. We've talked about this a ton of times, right? And I have enough stuff now that I'm really good at.
It's way easier to just do those things.
It's way easier to do those things, whether it's reading, writing, whatever else. And so as a result, I'll point to something like, oh, well, you know, I had like a date night yesterday, so I didn't do this, but I don't actually actively plan to do any of those things ever.
Which is, so I mean, even if you didn't have a date night, you
I
still
wouldn't have
you
done still it. Wouldn't. Yeah. And that's what I realized. And I was like, oh shit. So as far as a limitation goes, that, you know, that there's one right there as far as, but I think that that's the interesting thing is you can't, it's hard to know what limits you're self-imposing until they get exposed because something shifts.
So this also,
I think also, but before we continue on about the limitations thing, I think that point is really important, which is we talk constantly about like Netflix is bad, you know, et cetera.
Right.
And what you're talking about here is that it's a little more nuanced than that.
Right.
Which is Netflix is just a go-to excuse to not do the things that you supposedly want to do.
Because they're scary.
Because they're scary. But there are things that we also see as good, like socializing with your spouse, that we actually are also using as an excuse right. to not doing what we're doing.
Right.
So it's a little more nuanced than just like Netflix is bad, don't do that, and then everything is fine.
Right. It's just a convenient habit.
Yeah, it's recognize way. Why you're doing the things you're doing and when you're actually doing them for sort of unexpected reasons.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So I have a reading list. I have a reading list and a games to play list.
You made it in Airtable, right?
Well, it was originally just in my Todoist,
yeah.
which is just that at that point, it's just a checklist of like book titles.
Yeah.
So
basically then it's either read or it's not. Those are the two states. Right.
So like while I start reading it, like what am I? Do I check it? Do I not check it? I don't know. Because again, this is like the large problem versus task thing. If right. if the problem is like learn calculus, is that a thing? Can I just check that off? Like, when the fuck do I check that box? So I moved everything over to Airtable and I added a bunch of columns into my books to read database. So things like estimated time to complete that book from start to finish, the price of the book, the review score of that book on Amazon or whatever. And then I can try to prioritize things and also categorize my reason for reading that book. So one might be entertainment. Maybe it's a fiction book that somebody recommended, or maybe it's an educational thing. Like I want to learn calculus or, you know, learn something. So I have all these books on my list, and based on my hourly estimates, these books have been on my list for like probably at least three years.
Okay.
Right. And the total estimated time to get through all these books is like 83 hours.
Maybe. So it's maybe like 3 months of hardcore reading on the weekends.
Not even.
Not even.
Right. I mean, and so I'm looking at this and I'm like, so for years now, I've just been like a few weekends away from knowing all this stuff and being able to do all this stuff and understanding all these things. And I just didn't. Right? I just didn't do right. it.
So what's that about?
Yeah, it's so easy to get caught up in all kinds of other things, other hobbies or habits or, you know, weird mental states, weird hangups about starting new things, you know. Yeah.
Well, I think that's the bothersome thing about, and that I've gotten some comments from people about reading these either productivity books or self-help books or whatever else, where some people are like, why are you, you know, there's some people who have like a sort of categorical problem with diving into those things. And the reason that I do it personally is because any one of those books might help unearth one of these interesting, weird limitations that you can't see it. You just can't, like, that's part of the, usually if you can see a limitation that you know exists, then you're not like, I guess, doing anything about it, then I feel like it falls into a completely different category of thing.
But there's kind of a weird sort of a balance to be struck where if you read like 30 productivity books, and the whole time you're thinking about productivity and like you have all these ideas and philosophies about productivity, but then because you're spending so much time thinking about productivity, then there's something that if you just put 5 hours into it, you'd be really good at it and you'd be fine. But it's way easier to read a productivity book.
Exactly. So this thing is like you have to recognize again when you're doing something like that, which is using something you're comfortable with, say reading, to escape from the thing that you're uncomfortable with. And so a lot of people do this with regards to when they're researching before they embark on something that is actually scary, is they'll just over research.
Mm-hmm. Well, we talked about this a while ago too, right? Mm-hmm. That question of when you're trying to learn a new thing, how do you do it? And so at that time, I basically said what I do is I give myself a limit on the number of books I'm going to read.
So there's a good limitation.
Yep. Yeah. So that I basically just say, like, I know my tendency will be just to keep on trying to consume information instead of actually going out and trying to fight the hard battle of of doing it and learning it that way. And so it's safe to recognize those things and then set up systems to act against them.
Yeah, because you can't solve a problem just by thinking about it.
Or reading about it.
You also got to do. You got to do stuff. All right, next question comes from Giant Muskrat, which I like this question. I have no idea where this is going to go, but... What is your least favorite way to deal with stress?
Least.
Interesting. Well, here's the question. What are the ways in which you've dealt with stress that have just compounded the stress?
Oh, man. Most ways. Because here's the thing about stress is it makes you make bad decisions, right? So if you are stressed out, I've had times where like I've had sort of a laundry list of odd jobs to take care of. Errands, you know, maybe got to go to the bank. Maybe got to like call an insurance agent to talk about shit. Usually this involves like dealing with other people or bureaucracies and stuff. I've got this big list of things and I may have like an afternoon to do these. And I'll have these things just bouncing around in my head of like 9 different things I'm supposed to be doing. And I just sit there and I'm like, oh, so many things. I'm so tired. And then I just take a nap.
And then, I've done that before too.
And then the next day, I've still got all those things, right?
Yeah, those stress naps. Whew.
Yeah. So like basically the worst way to deal with anything that's a stressor is to avoid it,
yeah.
Which is doing literally anything other than just
I have an even worse one.
What's that?
Which is, although it's often a consequence of not dealing with it, which is lashing out at people.
Mm.
Yeah. And basically having your stress cause stress splash damage on other people.
But really, lashing out at people in response to stress on yourself is a defense mechanism, because what you're then doing is you're creating a distraction for yourself, right?
It's not a defense mechanism. It's an offense mechanism.
Well, no, it is a defense mechanism, though.
It can be both.
Because you don't want to deal with the thing that's actually bothering you.
Yeah, yeah.
And so
make
you
it bother other people.
You create a more urgent problem that you can deal with, which is getting into a screaming match with somebody about something, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now all of a sudden, that's the most important thing going on right now.
Yeah,
the fact that you pissed this person off, which is all true.
But then it just forgets that there's another person involved mm-hmm. in that thing.
Yeah,
which is why I would say it's not defensive at all. It's a horrible offensive thing.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
to do, even though you're doing it. If only you existed in the universe, yeah, that would be
another terrible way to deal with stress. is to complain.
Yes.
Which is it's like the other side of the lashing out coin.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So because some people get confused between what it is to complain and what it is to essentially talk through a thing with someone.
It's all about your intended end result.
Right. Yeah.
To complain is to simply talk about a problem and then
to have talked about it.
Just to have talked about it with absolutely no intention of doing anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
And this kind of thing just drives me crazy. If you're gonna problem solve, then that's you just having a conversation, and then in order to gather information and get a better understanding, and then go and do something.
Yeah, well, right? That's an interesting thing about the stress. So then, psychology called stress carryover, which is actually a huge problem, like generally in the workforce, because most people have jobs that they get sort of shat on in various ways during their workday, and the idea is like that's
especially in like daycare centers and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, literally in those mm-hmm. sense, zoos, that sort of thing.
Yep,
and then you come home. And I'm trying to carry this metaphor.
And then your spouse shits on you too.
Well,
and
what it does is it's sort of like the straw that breaks the camel back situation, right? Where
no, it's that if you get shit on all day, you come home, you sit on the couch. Now the couch is
exactly
shit
what I mean.
On
yeah,
it.
There's like the shit just gets all
you
over.
You try to do dishes, but you're covered in shit. Yeah. Now the dish everything's yeah. covered.
Yeah, so it's sort of like this, you know, this stain that kind of falls yeah. the other way. But yeah, but I think another interesting point about you know, like really terrible ways to try to deal with your stress. And this is it's sort of counterintuitive because normally I'm all about going to the gym when you're stressed out. But if you're angry and you go lift,
you get really good PRs.
I mean, you'll have a great day, and then the next 2 days will be probably the most horrible days of your life. I've done this twice where I was like, I just need to go burn off some rage, you know, mm-hmm. and then went and did that, and then was just like laid up for 3 days afterwards. So normally I would say exercise is great, you know, it takes your mind off stuff.
So maybe do some anger cardio, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do a rage run.
It's probably a little safer, but it is hard to rage run, you know, like than it is to just lift a heavy thing, I think. Cause there's mm-hmm. something about like the grunting and screaming involved with lifting heavy objects. Yeah. Although you could just scream and grunt as you run, I guess, probably.
Every step is
well, just do sprints, right? Do sprints with intervals and just scream while
yeah,
you do
screaming,
it.
Though, yeah, screaming, though, is essential to
I
the
like
process.
Discussion. It's a good one.
Yeah.
So scream sprints are a great way, which isn't yeah. the answer to the question.
Yeah. But. Yeah. So I think in summary, every way to deal with stress is bad except for just taking
actually
care of the fucking
it.
Problem. Right.
Yeah. You should just ask yourself, is what I'm doing going to help me take care of this problem?
No, then this is the worst yeah. possible thing I could be doing.
Because sometimes it's true that you're like, I need to go for a walk. Yeah. You know? I need to go for a walk and that way I'll clear my head. I can think straighter and I'll be able to solve this problem. Mm-hmm. If that's the case. If you're like, I need to go for a walk because I'm trying to physically distance myself as far as possible from the source of this problem that's in my house, then
that's probably not the right solution. The way to do it.
I was thinking about how dogs are great, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think...
Except for the pooping.
But everybody poops, you know, so sure. it's kind
it's,
of a neutral.
But it's also not great that everybody poops.
If we could all just not poop?
You don't get to excuse one thing by just everybody else also doing it.
Everybody else is doing it, so it must be fine. And I was thinking about how, so like I may be like in the middle playing a game or something and Coco, my dog, will come in and she'll like,
I got to poop right now.
Or yeah, she'll just be like, she'll just come in and she'll look at me expectantly and just be wagging her tail. And I'm like, I know what she wants. She wants to go for a walk, right? Because she has very clear body language about this. Mm-hmm. This is clearly the thing she wants. I was thinking, imagine if dogs behaved like people, where the dog, instead of coming in and just being like, let's fucking go for a walk. This is going to be awesome, right? If instead your dog just laid there in its bed and just sort of begrudgingly started resenting you for not just sort of intuitively knowing that it wanted to go for a walk. And then when you went to take it for a walk, your dog was like, nah, never mind. Like, I don't even feel like it anymore. Because dogs have no concept of.
They certainly don't have resentment.
They don't have resentment. And they wear their emotions on their sleeve, right? They're completely honest creatures. And as a result, they're just happy all the time, right?
It's a good way to be.
You got to be like a dog when it comes to dealing with stress. That's what I think. All right.
Just freak out, rip up the pillows.
Rip up those pillows.
She wants some bones.
And then, of course, you got this new pillow problem to deal with. But all right. So next question or last question comes from Anonymous. This is spooky. Okay. So, how can I convince my brother to quit his job so we can start the second greatest indie game dev company founded by brothers?
Well, he didn't say that we were the first best, though. Because we know a lot of studios founded by brothers, actually.
It's actually weirdly common.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So was he talking about us?
I don't know. Probably not.
Probably not.
There's Love You to Bits guys later.
Mm-hmm. Yep. They're great. I think we're probably like
12th.
No, I think we're probably in like the 30s, like 32. Yeah. So we got a ways to go. How do you do it? Get your brother to go to a game jam. Yep. Cause that's what I did.
Yep. Worked out.
Yeah.
And then if he's real stubborn, then you take like a year and a half and build some games and just be like, hey, I'm pretty sure this is going to work. And he'll be like, yeah.
Yeah. You gotta lead the charge. You know, you can't start at zero. You have to have something that your brother can look at and latch onto.
And you have to empathize. You have to say, well, what do you want to do with your life? And then he's like, you know, I want to be a scientist. And you're like, a scientist of games?
And you'd be like, yeah, but science is dumb.
Yeah. Well, no, that's not empathizing. That's telling him it's wrong. You got to empathize and then you lead him back to your camp.
Yeah. It's basically just all about sort of like psychological and emotional manipulation.
Yeah. 100%. You
know? Okay. Also, your third talk is called Snake Oil.
Oh shit. Yeah. It's hilarious. It's the one about marketing.
It's because it's.
Yeah. So the idea is, so the talk is called Snake Oil. Marketing your indie game. And so the idea is that, like snake oil, we sell a thing that nobody needs, solves no one's problems, and that there are
thousands of competitors
that offer
every day
the same benefit, quote unquote, every single day. So it's very similar. So what does it mean? What does it mean for us?
But again, it's not that we aren't meeting a need. It's that it's sort of higher up on Maslow's hierarchy.
It's not a.
It's in the self-actualization area. Go, yeah. We're not giving you food. We're not giving you shelter. We're not keeping you from dying. Yeah. You know,
we're not giving you medicine.
But we are providing you with interesting challenges and a good time. Mm-hmm. So we got that going. Yeah. But the thing is. You know, there's thousands of other people doing the exact same thing every day. So like 1,000 games coming out on mobile a day. Now Steam, there's, six, and everybody's shitting their pants about it, you know.
No, I think since the last couple of weeks, it's been in the 20s every day.
20s a day?
20 or 30, which is adorable.
That's so cute. Oh, look at those little 20 games.
We were born in the darkness.
Yeah, so that's Sam's third talk. Yeah,
they're good.
But I think, so the reason that popped into my head is, you know, the idea of talking about convincing somebody to join you in starting a game studio is weird because of this reason.
Yeah, because there's no good reason to do that.
So it has to be something that you're all either passionate about the game side or that you're passionate about a lot of other things that get wrapped up into the making project. A game.
Yeah, if I didn't like business or I didn't like programming, this would have been a bad
It would have been a bad move.
Yeah.
If you were like, listen, I'm really into dissecting rat colons.
Yeah.
Can we do that like, as part of Butterscotch? We'd be like, probably not.
Can't figure that.
Not quite sure how to work that in.
And again, to our pipeline. I prefer mouse colons. We've been over this.
Oh, right. Mouse colon.
Yeah.
But anyway.
rat colons are too big.
Yeah.
But there's another question here, which is not being asked, which is also, should you?
Should you?
You know? Which is, I guess, what Seth's talk is going to be all about. So. You can go to GDC and then you'll find out.
Well, no, my talk is you've probably already made that decision. So here's all the ways that you're probably going to screw that up and then don't do those things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a hard thing to do. We can't weigh in on whether you should or should not do it.
But you should.
But if you were to do it, use a lot of emotional manipulation to do so. That's the way to do it.
Yeah.
100%.
Totally.
Just go full Machiavellian prince on that guy, you know?
Yep.
Pull him off your side.
Or maybe Manchurian Candidate.
There's that book. Of
Genghis Khan.
So there's a book. There's all kinds of moves you can make here.
There's a book called Influence, The Psychology of Persuasion. Just get right into that.
48 Laws of Power. That's a good one.
Yep. Exert dominance.
Mm-hmm. look straight in the eyes. Square up.
Yeah. There's books on like chimpanzee behavior.
Speak really low.
Comes down to body language. Yeah. That's really important.
Yeah.
And if it really comes down to it, you could probably get into some kind of seedy underbelly of like black markets and various sort of financial manipulation. There's all kinds of horrible things you can do.
Absolutely. I'm sure there are love potions. There's probably also like join me in a business venture potions.
Business potions.
Try to get one of those.
Just talk to a wizard and get a business potion.
Yep.
I would love a business potion.
The problem is it only makes you want to do business. It doesn't make you good at business.
Yeah.
So it's kind of
a... Hey, man, you got to have one before the other, you know?
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
It was deep.
Thanks.
It's actually better to have the one where you want to do business, probably.
Yeah. Eventually, hopefully, you get good at it after doing it for a long time. So, all right. Well, that's all the time we have for this week. We'd like to thank our studio wrangler, Monique, for putting this episode together. Our producer, Fat Bard, for making us sound good. And the B-Scotch dev team, Andy, Tifa, and Sher, for continuing to build stuff while we're in here doing this podcast. We'd also like to thank our community moderators who keep our Discord and forums running. And of course, we'd like to thank our listeners for coming back every week to listen to us do this thing.
Or whichever weeks you come.
Yeah.
Listen, I don't know if it's every week or, you know, just like.
It's every week.
Better be.
That'd be
ideal. It better be. Also, if you'd like, if you want to get more involved in the B-Scotch community, you can hop into our Discord server, which is at bit.ly/BSDiscord. Come say hi. Also, this past week, some of our listeners found a flower. Actually, it was a giant muskrat. Mm-hmm. Found a flower and posted it in there so we could send it over to the druid dad for identification.
Mm. Gotta do that.
But it's not an Iowan flower, though, so I don't know. If it might be outside of his knowledge.
I'm sure he will somehow know.
He did send exact GPS coordinates for the location that he found the flower.
Yeah.
So we have a Google Map. We have a Google Map pin.
All right, we'll upload it.
So we know the exact elevation and region and climate and everything.
We were actually, for a while, talking about making just a web app just for us to use that would just, we could post pictures to our dad on. Would say, Dad, what is this? And then he would post what it is. And that way we'd have a database that we could all access.
Yep.
Because right now we also have this sort of fragmentation of knowledge. Because like I know about the things that I've asked him about. Sam knows what et cetera.
That's true. It's a problem.
It's a problem. We got this knowledge fragmentation.
And I mean, we can't use Wikipedia.
No,
would be crazy. So we got to just do this.
Can't use reverse image searches.
Nah.
Nope. You know? You just got to ask the druid dad.
Although it is true though, because there's not enough information just in the image.
Yeah.
To actually be able to look it up without knowing exactly what is in that image.
Yep.
And our robots are too dumb right now.
For now, give them 6 months.
Yeah.
All right. And also, one final thing. We don't advertise this show. So if you'd like to help us spread this show, then tell everybody you know about it. But most importantly, tweet at famous people.
Yep.
Get them to listen to, this show.
As someone tweeted at Kim Kardashian.
Nice work.
That's good. Yep. We've got some Justin Bieber tweets in there. I think Oprah and what's her name? The hilarious comedian.
Ellen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I kept thinking Ellie,
that comedian lady.
That one hilarious one. And consider maybe this week also like targeting some people in the same, like in the games industry, just to see if that might be a little more effective.
Maybe, but it's hard to say. We don't have enough data.
Yep.
We don't have enough famous people following to sort of do a poll. Right. So we need at least 30.
Yeah.
And then we can start doing statistical analysis of our famous people followers.
Currently the only one we have is Deadmau5, who is a follower of ours now. So
it was a sleeper pick.
That was a good catch. Also, we do have a mailbox at mailbox.bscotch.net, which, so if you want to send us anything, feel free. We've gotten a 5-pound gummy bear before, which was pretty great.
We also got a false notice last week.
Last week, they sent us people. We get an email because we have it hooked up to our email. So whenever we get a package, we get an email. It's like, hey, come check our mailbox. We got a little package for you. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They record that voice and put it in there. So Monique's like, yes, should I go get it? We're like, no, just go tomorrow. She was very excited. She wanted to just.
Monique loves opening packages.
She just wanted to roar down the street and go get this package. We made her wait. She got it the next day.
So she was just so much anticipation.
The anticipation was building. She goes there. She opened. There's nothing in there. She goes and asks. She's like, hey, we got an email about this package. And they said, yeah, we accidentally emailed everyone. And we told everyone that they have packages, even if they don't.
And she was like, didn't follow that up.
She's like, but you then didn't email everyone again to tell them, never mind. And they're like, yeah, we figured, they'd figure it out.
So I was like, what?
But point being, if you send us a package, we will know.
And we will go get it.
And if you don't, we'll also think you did.
It's breaking our heart.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.